Okay.
So welcome back, and welcome to those new faces. And Mary's first year to the Arsite series. She's very excited. You excited, Mary? She's very excited. And remember, like we like to do here, our goal is to learn from the tzaddikim and have more and more and more rebbes. Sorry I wasn't here last week. I had a brief hiatus to get back in touch with the tzaddikim. So I visited many of them, and I bring their regards to all of you. Mm-hmm. Told them about our shir, and they were very excited. Baruch Abur. Mm-hmm. Hopefully soon we'll talk about them. Ethan, if you can't behave. yes, she is 1.5.
Okay.
I got you good.
And I don't usually mention this, because if I would say this, I would have to say it every single week. But to try and bring someone's life and someone's essence into 30 minutes is impossible. So the more multifaceted people we speak about, the more almost ridiculous it is that we're talking about them. It's like they say that you're not really supposed to describe Hashem, because once you start, it's insulting to stop. So in davening, we say, Akela Gadol Gibor Vanora. But that's only because we have those words from other people, like from Moshe Rabbeinu or whatever. So, Pia Zetzner Pia Zetzner is one of those multifaceted. And the Pia Zetzner, like we spoke 2 weeks ago about the Klosenberger Rebbe. Klosenberger Rebbe lived through hell, made it out, lived 50 years afterwards. the Pia Zetzner did not have the same mazel. Ethan, you have to behave. Pia Zetzner is Muslim. Pia Zetzner was born in 1889 in a place called Grodzisk. Never know how to pronounce these things. In Poland. And he grew up, it's crazy, his father passed away when he was 3 years old. Right away, his father passed away. But he grew up, and he ultimately married the daughter of the Rebbe of Kozhnitz, and what's so cool about it is that everyone's got different wives. Pia Zetzner's wife, if you ever see any of Pia Zetzner's Sfarim, she edited them.
Wow.
And does not say her name in the Sfarim.
Is it editor?
No. Yeah. And she even put in her own chidushim sometimes.
That's a crazy
point. So if you're learning any of Pia Zetzner's Sfarim, you're like, wait, who really wrote this part? I'm not sure. So what I was saying was that we're not going to focus so much on what we focus on with the Klosenberger. Klosenberger is, Mamish focused a lot about on the war and the Holocaust and the struggle. Pia Zetzner has so many parts of him, and it's not so fun to talk about the Holocaust. So we did it 2 weeks ago, what you would say, whatever. But we'll focus a little bit different with the Pia Zetzner. So when he was around the age of 30, 1909, so do the math. What is that? 20. He was 20 years old. He moved to Piazetsna. And at the age of 20, he started a yeshiva.
Wow.
Now, one of the most remarkable parts about Piazetsna, I want to actually just reframe. His life is basically a collection of four different sfarim. He wrote a few more. What sfarim do you know that Piazetsna wrote?
Alam Amidos.
No, that is Moshe Dan Kesselbaum. What do you got? Eish Kodesh is one. Chovas HaTalmidim is two. No one else. What about? What else we got?
Is this for stuff we're supposed to know?
This is a good svarim, very good svarim. So those are the two most famous. He also wrote a sefer called Bnei Machshava Tova, a sefer called Derech HaMelech, and a sefer called Hechsharas Avreichim. Those are the big, what do we say, four? Just now, this is the big four. Eish Kodesh was written in the Warsaw Ghetto. He had this yeshiva for, let's say, 20 years, something like that. And then they got rounded up Warsaw Ghetto, 25 years. And in the ghetto, Eish Kodesh was written. That's his drushos from the ghetto itself. In the craziest place in the world. Have you guys ever opened Eish Kodesh? It's not so easy. But it's also really hard. It's hard to read in Hebrew, but it's also really hard because of what the heck is going on there. The Pia Zetzner is in the craziest place in the world. and he's writing about how hard it was there. And I can imagine people are dying on the streets all around him. Imagine going to Shul Shabbos morning, and you pass 40 dead bodies in the street on the way. And then, like, what the heck can the rabbi say in Shul that day? How can you even still, like, how can you even have anything? In fact, even keep going to Shul. So that was what the PSS did. And for a few years, I think it's 3 years, he was in the Warsaw Ghetto. And every single Shabbos, he's darshaning. And you can go through the pieces in the Sefer. It gets worse and worse by the parsha, by the year of the situation around. He writes in the beginning of Esh Kodesh that he's like, yeah, like we're getting persecuted, but this is the same as it's been throughout our Galus. Nothing's that different. But then you go the next year, Hanukkah, I think this is, I don't remember which year it was, one of the, it was Yud Ches Kislev. Like the next year, and he's like, I take back everything I ever said. This is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this before. The Jewish people have never, and you get to go through the beginning of the Holocaust, through the Holocaust, in the eyes and through the words of the Pesach Narevi. But we'll get back to that in a minute. But that's one Sefer Esh Kodesh, that's one part of who he was. Another part that's huge, and that's what we're going to focus a little more on tonight, was the trilogy of Sfarim that he wrote on education. The first Sefer, Chovas HaTalmidim. Anybody ever open it?
No.
Beautiful? Extremely beautiful. He wrote it, and then he was like, he was telling someone, he's like, if I didn't know that I wrote it, I wouldn't believe that I could write this. That's what he said. He's like, it's the most beautiful thing. Is it water? It's the most beautiful thing. He didn't even understand how he could write it. Chovas HaTalmidim, he said he wrote every single word. Before he wrote every single word of that Sefer, he imagined a Talmud right in front of him. And he said, what does this Talmud need? Every single letter of that Sefer was within a mat. Like, people write Sfarim. Sometimes people write Sfarim because they're cool. Like I'm a Chaver Sfarim. I wrote Sfarim. It's for themselves. Or even not if they're cool. Like, to get to write words. To get it out. He wrote a Mamish just for the students. That's what he wrote it for. What? Here.
She's a comedian.
That's it? Okay. He wrote it just for us. You have to open that Sefer, it'll blow your mind. That's the beginning, and I just heard from Moshe Tzvi Weinberg. Somebody asked him, he's like, if I want to start learning Hasidus, where should I start? Okay. Said close to me. So yes, you should have heard of that Sefer at this point. But now you have.
What's it called?
Chovas HaTalmidim, and it's translated to English.
It's translated to English.
Really?
Okay. It's an incredible, and the English is beautiful as well.
You didn't.
I've been through a lot of it in Hebrew and a lot of it in English, and it's both very, very good. Yeah, I recommend buying it. It's amazing. Very, very important Sefer. And then he moves on to a Sefer, which is, now you're not a Talmud anymore, now you're an Avreich. Now you got two children, and you're teaching a little bit. How to keep growing it when you're 25, 26. And then he has a third Sefer, B'nei Machshav HaTova, which is a Sefer about creating a community. It's very, very, very small. The second one is Hacharas Avreichim. It's about being an Avreich. Third Sefer is B'nei Machshav, how to create a community. When you're 30, 40, or even 25, I had a chabura with a couple of friends last year. Get together once a week. We learn B'nei Machshav HaTova. It's how to create a spiritual community. How to keep growing. The Piazetzer is all about growing and growing and growing. And my wife, Ariane, so she went to Stern. She graduated in... She got a master's just now in special ed. No. She got a master's in Jewish education. Progressive Jewish education. What?
How do you make this up?
What? Special, because special, everything's special. Everything, Jewish education is the most special education there is.
Special.
And she told me that the amount, like, the most common reference name in the school was Esh Kodesh. And he died in 44? 43. He was 75 years ahead of his time. 80 years, 100 years ahead. Before the entire educational world developed and progressive education. Give me an example of old school education.
Discipline.
Hit the kids, discipline, what else? The kind of stuff that we all know doesn't work at all. Teachers facing the class and lectures for an hour, and that's class. P. Zessner says something so beautiful. Chovas HaTalmidim in the beginning. What does the word chinuch mean? What does chinuch mean, no? You guys are all learning, right? You know what chinuch means?
We skipped the first chapter.
What does chinuch mean, no? You don't have to know the Sefer. What do you think it means?
Education.
Education. Right? You're in school, teacher teaches you things. That's chinuch. Says the Piazetzna, chinuch comes from a different word. Chanukah. Chanukah samizbeach, chanukah samishkan. What does it mean, a chanukah sabayas? What are you doing there? Are you teaching a house?
No.
What are you doing? Big English word for it.
Dedicating.
Inaugurating is really the best word for it.
You're wrong.
What? No, but what is inaugurate? It means I built a house and I'm inaugurating it. Chinuch. So the Piazetzna says chinuch is not teaching. Like, I'm the master, I'm the Rebbe, I'm going to teach you something. Because you don't know, I'm going to fill you up with information. That's not teaching. That's what a lot of the schools we went to growing up, that's what happened. You go to school, year after year, getting filled up with stuff. That's what they think education. Peter Zessner says no. Chinuch means looking deep at a student, at a child, whatever. Looking deep down, seeing what's inside the student, and inaugurating that. Right, Miri? We're not just going to take you and teach you stuff. We're going to let you be you.
No.
That's what it means. And can you imagine, Matt? That's like the newest educational thing in the world. To have a Rebbe say it to you is like gold. That's what we need to hear. That's our generation kind of stuff. But when I was growing up, you think anybody ever said it to me ever? I'm not that old. You think our parents, anybody dreamed of saying that to somebody? This is 100 years ago he had these ideas. And this is the most progressive education. He said, what's the job of a Rebbe, of a parent? It's not to teach the kid, to show him, to I'm an educator. It's to partner. To say, Evan, let's work together on your growth.
Okay.
See, it's so easy. In 1 second, it's okay. There's no resistance because I'm not making you do anything. So that was the PSS educational model. And that's what he's doing. And it keeps on growing. And Evan's the best. Gosh, we're all going together, right? We're chavrusas.
That's right.
Go together, and that was the godless of the educational model. The who's the biggest fan of the Piazetzna? Do we know anybody who named his shul after the Eish Kodesh?
Moshe
Weinberger. And this is like his, like Weinberger loves this part of the Piazetzna, the chizik that he gave in the Holocaust, and also like how do you look at a human being. I'm not trying to mold you. I'm not going to force you into doing anything. When you force someone to do something, it doesn't stick. It's not real. When you show them that they just want to be themselves and let them be themselves, that's how they actually grow into someone themselves. So there's also one more part of the Piazetzna, but we're going to talk about that in a minute. But just to tell you what happened in his life. Has his yeshiva from 1909 to the 30s. At a certain point, they said, you know, the Holocaust began. And they got rounded up. He was in the Warsaw Ghetto. He was working in a shoe factory. And he was saved. He wasn't sent to Treblinka. His family was killed. But he was able to survive for a little while. And for years, he was giving shir in the Warsaw Ghetto and every Shabbos. And keeping the chevra, making sure there's a mikvah, making sure there's kashras in the Warsaw Ghetto, which was crazy. Remember, we said the Klosenberger Rebbe went into the Warsaw Ghetto to harvest the skeletons. And this is what the Piazetzna was living through. So, that's where he was. And we have his drushes. And you heard how crazy it was. And then in 1943, the Piazetzna was sent to a concentration camp. And ultimately, he was shot. And his story ended right there. And what's fascinating, the Piazetzna had a brother. Very, very interesting character named the Admor HaChalutz. What's a chalutz? Anybody know?
The light rostov.
Which one?
A chalutz.
I never taken it.
You've never taken the
rakhada?
It's on the way. It's spaced out. Okay, fine. But a chalutz means a pioneer. His brother made Aliyah before it was cool. And he was in Israel. And we have a letter. His brother said, I'm going to try to prepare for you to come to Eretz Yisrael. And he could have left and escaped the Holocaust. So a few years ago, I was in Majdanek. Have you guys ever go to Poland yet?
No.
So I was in Majdanek, and I was actually misinformed. I was told that he was killed in Majdanek, which is not true. And some people say he was killed in Treblinka, which I also heard is not true. Travniki, he was shot in Travniki, not in a death camp. It's a small place, not.
It was a
kind of a working camp. But for whatever reason, the Nazis decided they're going to shoot everybody one day, and they killed everyone.
Everyone in that whole
place? In the camp. But I was in Majdanek, and so I thought he was buried. So I was davening in Majdanek and speaking to the Piazetzner. And I was speaking to him, and I was asking, like, why didn't you leave? Right? Remember we spoke about 2 weeks ago? The Klozmer Rebbe, he left. He didn't escape. He lived through the Holocaust and was liberated. He lived for 50 years afterwards. Like what? He lived for 50 years afterwards. Look what he built up. He built the whole city of... He built the whole Tzanz Chasidus. He built Netanya. He built the biggest, one of the biggest hospitals in Israel. He built a borough park. Like, look what... I was like so upset. Like, Peter, like, why didn't you leave? My God. Why didn't you leave when you could have? And it took me a while to realize that when you understand who he was, you understand how much he loved every single child. He loved the babies. He would teach little children all the time. He made a yeshiva for little kids. But the love that he had for every single Jew said, I can't leave them behind. That was why. It was like, yeah, I could survive, but I can't leave my people. It's not just like a kuvart, it's like, these were his kids. I mean, his own children, his wife, they were all killed. But he couldn't leave. He was in the worst place in the world, but he had to be there. He was in the Sheol Tachtes, like the depths of hell, but he didn't want to leave. So the Piazetzner's life is remarkable. The academics love it because you get to see what a rabbi's faith looked like in the Holocaust, and you get to watch him struggle in Eish Kodesh, and like how like him like approaching Hashem, like how are you doing this to us? And it's remarkable to read that sefer and to see what's going on. But like for a Jew, it's also a tremendously inspirational thing. What we're gonna do now. That was Chelek Aleph. Chelek Beis and Chelek Gimel will be very interesting. Chelek Beis, this is something that Weinberg I've never heard speak about, is the Piazetzner from the Baal Shem Tov had a very interesting tradition of how to enter higher levels of, let's say, consciousness.
Drugs.
Of thought. Not, without using drugs. Because drugs are for weak people. To be strong. And he has this principle called Hashkata. What does Hashkata mean? What's a Shoresh? Sheket, quiet. He says, in order to, like, I'll explain you something. You've heard of the word Nefesh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nefesh is made up of three things.
Oh, I just
we have a Nefesh,
this.
A Ruach, and a Neshama, but okay, those are three of our levels. Oh, your Nefesh is made up of three things. Your physical feelings, A. Your emotional feelings, B. And your thoughts. Okay, everyone, are you in your head right now? Get in your head. Your nefesh is made up of three things. Your physical feelings, emotional feelings, and your thoughts. And if you're able to go up from your neshama, from your nefesh, then you can get closer to feeling your neshama. You can get closer away, because right now the nefesh is very much here. But how do you access the spiritual part of life? How do you get a little more spiritual? By learning how to differentiate between different parts of who you are. So Piazetzner has an idea. Piazetzner has an idea called Hashkata. And it's from the Baal Shem Tov. And I was trained in doing this by one of my Rebbeim. His name is Rav Yehoshua Gerzi. Wait, what's that? Can I go on? Can I go on cash? That's in your chair? Can I get it here?
Should we sit here?
So I was trained to do this by one of my Rebbeim, Rav Yehoshua Gerzi. And there's two steps. It's called Habata and Hashkata. So, anybody here ever meditated before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is going to be a little bit similar, so you'll know at least what you're doing.
We're doing
an exercise. It's not the same thing as meditation, but it's like it. And the goal of this is to learn a tool how to get closer to the neshama, practically. Okay, so it's easier to close your eyes. It'll be only chamesh dakot. What? No. We need the light up. Close your eyes. And we'll do it for only 5 minutes. But it'll show you how to do it, and you'll see if it does anything to you. So the first thing we're doing is the key is, as we're noticing everything, we're not going to judge anything. We're just going to let it be. So, sitting in a chair right now, ask yourself the question, what are my feelings? What am I feeling physically? Am I feeling my feet on the ground? Right, and feel, focus on everything that you're physically feeling. You're feeling your breath, you're feeling your yarmulke on your head, you're feeling the chair. And just let it be. Be aware of your feelings, physical sensations. If you have an itch, let it itch. Say, that's interesting. My nose is itching.
Now I have
it. Okay, very nice.
You want me to itch it?
No, just let it be. The itch is just itching. Now ask yourself the question of what are my emotions? What emotion am I feeling right now? What are my emotions? Am I sad? Am I happy? Am I calm? Just let it be. Just, and I'm judging the emotion. And if you hear any sounds, just let the sounds go. Okay, nice. There's a baby here. Tough. And the third thing is, what are my thoughts? What are the thoughts that are running through my head right now? Just thinking thoughts, just watch them pass. Just be aware of the thoughts in your head. This is funny. I've never done this before. I wonder if anybody else's eyes are open.
Should I check?
No. But be aware of the thoughts going through your head. Judge anything, just be aware. So now we're aware of how we feel physically, how we're feeling physically, how we're feeling emotionally, what our emotions are, and now what are my thoughts. And if you notice right now, the fact that you're aware of your feelings, of your physical feelings, and of your thoughts, it means that there's something above all those things, which is your awareness. So realize that. You can even imagine yourself being above all those things that we're talking about. Everything below is the nefesh. You can slowly open your eyes, and when I tell you open the eyes, and you can just breathe it in. But not yet. But take a deep breath of what this is. Recognizing the different parts, being above the nefesh. Open your eyes. Raf, you can wake up. So, no one's probably done that before, right?
Yeah.
What do you have to say about it? That's good.
I should have before I go to bed.
Was it hard? Was it hard to?
No, I fell asleep fast.
What?
I fell asleep.
Fell asleep. Okay. Anything else?
When you were saying, I feel like physical feelings, like really nervous, like stuff that I noticed before, like how my my leg was against the pole, like my hands, my fingertips. And then you said like what are your emotions? Like I never really like just thought. I didn't really sit down and just thought about it.
Yeah, it was very cool to separate the difference between your physical and your emotional, and then take that all together and bring your awareness of also your thoughts and how it all comes together and how there's a higher level of understanding.
So that's called habata we just did. Habata means being able to separate and look down. Habata, like to look. He has different levels, and then all of a sudden now, like, you're now in a higher level of, like, okay, like, I understand, like, I'm not going to get freaked out. I'm feeling a certain way, but, like, that's not me. I'm not going to get, I'm overwhelmed, but I'm not going to die, because my overwhelmed is below me. And I have these crazy thoughts, but I'm not going to die. They're below me. Everything is, like, you're able to relax once you separate yourself from all the things. I am not angry, I'm feeling angry. I am not going to lose my mind, I'm not nervous, I'm feeling nervous. Whatever it is, you separate. So that's one of the things. And there's different levels. Now all of a sudden your mind is clear and you throw in Enod Milvado. That's called Hashkata. Different levels. Anyway, so I wanted to just show you there's a whole world in that direction, using the imagination, using your own mind, and figuring out like what your mind can do. That's how you reach the neshama. That's how you reach different levels of spirituality. Learn how to see. And no one really talks about that from the Piazzetzner, but it's... I wanted to just at least expose, to ask, to show what that is. So the last thing we're going to do is, you have to watch this video. Usually I'm into multimedia presentations. I think they're cheap. You have to turn around. Come around. But this is like, I didn't want to not show this.
I would have my glasses if I knew we had a video.
You can hear, it's a song. You know, ever heard of Aaron Razel?
Yeah, of course.
This is a song that Rav Shlomo Karloff tells it in 20 minutes. And Aaron Razel turned into a song, but it's about the Piazzetzner. And it's about someone that he found. And Rav Shlomo's version, I think, is awesome. So you should listen to it. It's called The Holy Hunchback. But it was turned into a song here, not just a story. So here we go. This is Shlomo Karloff speaking.
He was sweeping the streets. His eyes were filled with grace. His body was all broken. A special light was shining from his face. I approached him and said, Shalom Aleichem. He replied, as in the shtetl, Aleichem Shulam. I continued in Yiddish, Mein Zisit, sweet brother Jew, would you tell me, where are you from? When he said I'm from Piasechna, it was like a bomb went off inside me. Never had I met a survivor from that town. As a child, did you ever see Rabbi Klumus Kalman? I asked. Of course, he said, one doesn't forget his childhood Rebbe. When I was 11, I got to Auschwitz. They thought I was 17 and sent me to the labor camps. Now I've got no one, I am alone in this world. He went on sweeping the streets. Promise me you'll remember this forever. The greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else a favor. I told them, my friend, I heard so much of Rabbi Kalman. Can you tell me some Torah wisdom you learned from him? He looked at me and said, you really think after Auschwitz there is something that we still can remember? And how can I ever describe how beautifully we welcomed the Shabbat? We danced and danced, all the children around the Rebbe. Oh yes, there's one thing I do remember. He used to tell us again and again, I'll remember this for the rest of my life. He said, promise me you'll remember this forever. The greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else a favor. The greatest, greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else a favor. Family was gone in flames. It was a dark night. I thought to put my life to an end. Then I heard the Rebbe's voice echoing in my ears. Remember, do a favor for someone else. You know how many favors you can do at night in Auschwitz. Broken people all around, then more arrive. I sat all night listening, giving them empathy and love. Guess that's how I survived. Kinder love, children of sweet, precious kinder love, promise me you'll remember this forever. The greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else a favor. The greatest, greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else favor. Even to this day, sometimes I feel my life has no purpose. I go into the sea, his voice comes in my ears. Kinder lach, remember, the greatest thing in the world. You know how much good the world needs today. Kinder lach, children of sweet, precious kinder. Promise me you'll remember this forever. Greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else a favor. The greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do someone else a favor.
That's the Holy Hunchback. That's what he always said. Take that with you from the PSS, and the greatest thing in the whole wide world is to do another Jew a favor. That's all for tonight. It was big. Alright? What? I think we need it after that song.
Save it for Mr. Monday.
Whole Vibe Tuesday.
Or not to say.
Or Black Be My Chris.
In the back of Chobas, there's a section called like Sholosh Ma'amrim. Mm-hmm. Is that also by him?
Yeah. He also wrote more stuff. He wrote Tzav Zeruz. That's his spiritual biography. Very interesting.
I read like Sholosh Ma'amrim. I don't really know. It's like a brilliant.
Yeah.
That's about the world.
I never read it.
Yeah. It's very different than going from like a student without being, you know, into something like that. It's a crazy.
I'll share you with you one last thing, one more thing that he says. Very, very interesting. This is in Tzav Zeruz, another statement he wrote. And this like really resonate, and it actually is good. Maybe we should learn it inside. But he says that, like, to really know yourself, you have to know that the soul craves to be stimulated, to be excited about something. And all you want is to be excited about something. And if he's asking right, if you don't find what's stimulating and exciting in Judaism, then you're going to go somewhere else just to find excitement. Like, you know this bad mess. Like, there's other places where the world is exciting. And you're going to go there. But the best thing is find it in Judaism because it's there. But you have to make sure you're excited about Judaism or else you're going to look somewhere else. Right? That's what he said the job of the teacher is to model for the kids and show them where Judaism is the most exciting thing. We gotta find it ourselves. But you're very interesting. Wanna sing it?
You say it's like
a group. Alright, guys.
What do you have, Mr. Mother? Because sometimes you can't follow.
I was gonna say, it's not a coincidence that the one Vod Mary comes to is the one about children.
She woke her up an hour ago.
Some heavy stuff.